Hello, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned in to my weekly wellness update podcast, bringing you the health news that you can use. Well, we start out this week with a study on dried plums in your diet will help your bones. Postmenopausal women who consumed 3.5 ounces of dried plums per day for 12 months had significantly better bone density compared to another group of postmenopausal women who didn't get the benefits of the plum treatment. Yes, eating plums can help your bones. Slows down the osteoclast, helps build up the bone density. Yet another food that appears to help human health. I have a warning for the California Dried Plum Board who sponsored this study. They didn't sponsor it. They provided the plums. You better hope that none of your dried plum companies put this study on their websites or the FDA will consider it an unapproved new drug, plums, and threaten to confiscate them from the companies, as they have done with cherries and almonds, thus protecting the human health from grave concerns of drug adulteration. Wow, isn't the FDA awesome? Acidophilus combats oral pathogens. Well, periodontal and cavity problems, of course, are big issues and concerns. And it's not surprising that they are associated with an imbalance of bacteria in the mouth. In other words, you can have friendlier versions of bacteria, and you can have unfriendlier versions of bacteria, and the unfriendlier ones can eat away the tooth enamel or cause bone loss resulting in periodontal problems. So just as your digestive tract has a balance of power, that same balance of power is reflected in your mouth. Sometimes your mouth floor is actually a reflection of the problems in your mouth. And sometimes your mouth flora is a reflection of problems in your mouth. So anyway, you get the point here. A study showed that various strains of Lactobacillus acidophilus, such as Lactobacillus plantarum and rhamnosus and KC, were able to kill directly the germs in the mouth, thus preventing them from being problematic. So that opens up a new use of acidophilus. You may want to open up a capsule, put it in some water, gargle with it, and maybe swallow it. You'd kind of want to let it stay in your mouth, so it might be something you do before bed or something you do after a meal so as to leave the positive bacteria in there. You wouldn't do this and then, you know, eat a meal or drink a bunch of water extra because it would just wash it down. The goal is to kind of keep some in there for a while, create a contact germicidal benefit, which essentially helps to balance the flora in your mouth. Interesting study. All right, E. coli and Salmonella can live in food, not just on food. This was news to me, so I thought I'd mention it to all of you in case it was news to any of you as well. I always thought these pathogens got onto the food somewhere in the food production process, which is also true, by the way. And then you could wash them off, or you put, you know, some kind of a cleanser on your food and then rinse them off or wash, soak them in this, that, or the other. With the net result of, cleansing the food of these potential bad guys, and that's still not a bad idea, but, this study shows that E. coli or Salmonella present in the soil due to contamination from, the water being contaminated with it or what have you, it can then get built into the food itself. So the food grows in this contaminated soil, and then has these pathogenic strains in the food tissues and fibers. In fact, it's in every aspect of plant tissue and fiber this thing can inhabit. And it can easily live for 12 days following being harvested, suggesting that you have to be also concerned about the quality of soil where your food you're eating is coming from, which is kind of something you should have always been concerned about anyway, as best you could. But now there's a new study here showing that this stuff lives. I mean, you can't wash it off. Once it's inside the tissues of the fruit or vegetable, it's in there. So that's kind of a nasty increased awareness of the potential problem and how it may occur. And, of course, I wrote not too long ago an article fully reviewing the importance of your digestive tract to combat any kind of infectious bug in the E. coli or Salmonella family. And that article was, of course, called The Highly Pathogenic E. coli Genie is Out of the Bottle. Can you withstand an attack? And if you didn't familiarize yourself with that article, I highly recommend you do. It emphasizes, of course, the power of your own digestive system to combat these germs, which I might point out to you it's been doing since the beginning of time. Although now we have some super strains, thanks to the overuse of antibiotics, that are not just in the hospitals, but have gotten out and about into the living community of you and I, and are here in the United States. There's no question about that. They've been in Germany in the news over the last couple of months, but we're just seeing more and more of an issue with this, so I'm kind of harping on your digestive health this month, and this is just a reminder that there's no shortcut to having a perfectly healthy digestive tract if you plan to be healthy, because you will be challenged sooner or later. And if your digestive tract is the weak link in your chain, then you will be more susceptible to either food poisoning or germ exposure. In other words, in the cold and flu season, you know, somebody sneezing, blowing all the germs around there in the air in any reasonable place where lots of people are. And so unless you plan on being a hermit all winter, you will be exposed to germs. You will breathe them in. You will swallow. As you swallow, they will go down into your digestive tract. You better hope your stomach acid kills them, and then you better hope the rest of your digestive immune defense is working properly. And the more you're not on antacids or other medications for digestion, and the healthier your digestive tract is functioning, the much more likely you are to be able to mount an appropriate defense and kill off anything that happens to get into you. So just yet another warning on that. In that same vein, mainstream doctors warn against antibiotics. Now, I almost fell out of my chair when I read this study. I mean, obviously, I warn about the dangers of antibiotics, but I'm just a nutritionist, and I'm not one of these mainstream doctors. And so here we have, you know, heads of medical departments in New York University warning all of his colleagues that antibiotics may be fueling the dramatic increase in many diseases, including type 1 diabetes, allergies, and inflammatory bowel disease, basically by destroying the friendly flora, and that those changes may in fact be permanent. In other words, the effects of these antibiotics are not just something you can blow off and hope they go away. And so on. Once again, you need your friendly flora, you need fiber, you need things that restore the digestive integrity, especially if you've had repeated courses of antibiotics, and most kids have. Their parents didn't know how, in many cases, to help them overcome bugs naturally, or maybe they just got a nasty bug and had to have an antibiotic, but that would be a reasonable use of antibiotics if that truly was happening. But any child who's getting repeated ear infections, or anybody who's taking antibiotics, say for acne or something, they're just creating major havoc in their digestive tracts. Not only do you get the overgrowth of bacteria, you get the overgrowth of candida albicans. You essentially set up a very hostile genomic activity. There's so much genomic activity going on with the bacteria and yeast in your digestive tract, and you get them out of whack with antibiotics, and all of a sudden they become a genomic toxic power plant that confuses your immune system, causes autoimmune problems, no doubt causes thyroid autoimmune, thyroiditis, Hashimoto's, Graves. A lot of that's coming from the digestive tract, not to mention, you know, type 1 diabetes and arthritis and aches and pains, even if it's not arthritis. Anyway, at least we have several doctors here warning, as best they can, that antibiotics are extremely dangerous, which they are. Fiber reduces the risk for breast cancer. This is a good study. It's a meta-analysis of 10 studies involving 712,000 adults. And for every 10-gram increment in dietary fiber, the risk for breast cancer goes down 7%. So on average, if you eat a very good variety diet with whole grains and fruits and vegetables, you'll get your 25 grams a day. You're in the minority if you do. Most Americans get about 12 grams of fiber per day, which obviously increases their risk. 25 grams would lower it by 7% and boosting it up further. I like 37 or even 50 grams if you're overweight, because you're also at risk for breast cancer from being overweight. And you can help both problems by increasing your fiber intake significantly, which needs to be done obviously with supplemental fiber. Otherwise, you'll be eating way too many carbohydrates and you won't lose weight either. But you can definitely get your fiber level up. And so if you have a bad family history in this area, or if you're overweight and concerned about your increased risk for breast cancer from being overweight, which you should be if you're not, fiber can help reduce those risks. Fiber helps absorb toxins. It helps absorb estrogens. It helps to produce fermented good byproducts such as butyric acid and vitamin K2. Which are anti-cancer gene-regulating compounds, which your body needs, and helps your blood sugar stabilize. So there's lots of good things fiber can do for you. It's a very simple way to address fundamental health issues, meaning it's a core staple of anybody's natural health program is adequate fiber. Bacterial vaginosis is associated with high carbohydrate diets. This would be an example, essentially, of hostile bacteria in the digestive tract mirroring hostile vaginal bacteria, which creates mucousy, smelly discharges that are problematic for women. It sets the stage for other problems is what it does, but it's also annoying in and of itself. But this comes about, now this is a study that proves that this vaginal flora imbalance is a direct mirror of digestive tract imbalance, because eating extra carbohydrates, especially too many sweets and sugars, which of course is a fermenting base for hostile bacteria, fuels its growth. Now, how that gets in vaginally, no one, that was not this talked about in this study. Usually the stuff crawls out rectally and crawls in vaginally, although there is some possible cross-contamination between the urinary tract and contents. But it all has to do with flora balance. And so when you eat this high sugar diet, you get excessive bad fermentation, which is then reflective of problems. So we see things, in this case it's vaginally we're talking about, but we see, you know, toenail fungus that won't go away because of digestive problems. We see digestive problems causing sinus problems and vice versa. We see digestive problems causing skin problems. And so what are all these surface areas have in common? It would be the mucosal immune system that gets out of whack. Once it's out of whack and the hostile gangs get going, then a person would be more at risk for other problems. So in the case of sexually transmitted diseases or candida vaginal infections, yeast infections, they would be more common when a person has underlying poor flora balance. So acidophilus is good. Vitamin A is good. Beta-carotene, very important for the mucosal defense system. Vitamin D is good. I mean, there's a lot of things you should do, but one of the things you should do is cut down eating sweets. That's very clear. It's like gasoline on the fire. How vitamin D protects against colon cancer. So vitamin D, of course, has been associated with lower colon cancer, and the lack of vitamin D has been associated with increased risk for colon cancer. That is not new. But this new study shows, we're starting to look at, with some of the, you know, analysis tools they have these days, the new gene science, and getting a better look at just even enzymes and proteins in the cells. They're finding that there's this particular protein in the cells that line your digestive tract, which are called your intestinal epithelial cells. They naturally make a protein called beta-catechin, and this protein acts on the cell membranes of these epithelial cells to connect them one to another, which is normal. That's how you get this digestive barrier that protects the underlying structure of your digestive tract from the contents that are in your digestive tract. You have an epithelial barrier, and this is connected with these beta-catechins. Well, if your digestive tract is then lacking in vitamin D and you have some form of stress going on, digestive distress, then what happens is when lacking in vitamin D, the beta catechin doesn't behave properly. In other words, it doesn't work. It doesn't make the epithelial connections the way it would if you were vitamin D adequate. And instead, it builds up inside of the cell and actually builds up to toxic levels, causing damage to the DNA in the cells, which then starts the cancer process going. So it probably isn't in and of itself enough, but if you have some other kind of hostile problem, such as imbalanced bacteria from taking antibiotics and other dietary indiscretions, then you could create a hostile environment where if you are also vitamin D deficient, now the DNA damage can magnify. And so this study explains how that happens. This is very interesting stuff. So one of the most simple, basic things anyone should do for colon health is make sure they are vitamin D adequate. 2,000 to 5,000 units a day are a good idea for just about anyone, with the 5,000 unit a day being in the winter months. If you're not sure what your vitamin D levels are, or you just want to get a baseline on them, get them tested, and then get them tested again 6 months later or before winter and after winter to make sure that whatever you're supplementing is keeping them up in the 50 to 80 range. So get it not just at the bottom of the normal range, isn't where you want to be. For disease prevention, you want to be up in the 50 to 80 range. Overwhelming science says so. The only one who's not telling you that are the public health officials that are pretending to be responsible for the public health. Because, of course, if your vitamin D was adequate, you wouldn't be getting sick, and then you wouldn't be afraid of flu bugs, and you wouldn't be going off to get the dangerous vaccinations that these very same public health officials want to offer up to you in the name of you being treated as a part of the herd. All right. Well, last but not least on my studies of the week, we have another article I have written on the FDA, the FDA propaganda attempts to destroy the dietary supplement industry. We have sitting atop the FDA, this current commissioner. Her name is Margaret Hamburg. And she has embarked upon a intentionally deceptive propaganda campaign. She touts herself as a zealot for the advancement of regulatory science. I would have called her that, but she calls herself that. I guess she thinks that's positive. Except she doesn't really use regulatory science to protect the public health. She just uses it to advance her own agenda, which has got multiple different layers, but basically what revolves around being the police force in her own mind in terms of what she thinks she's supposed to be doing. I mean, you can understand. I mean, this is not a dumb person sitting atop the FDA. She was, born to elite psychiatrist parents who put her in through the finest science universities in America, where she learned neuropharmacology and genomic science, so she's no dumbbell. So you can imagine that when she sees study after study on dietary supplement ingredients proving beyond any shadow of a doubt that they influence the human genome and prevent disease, something she clearly understands based on her education, I mean, whether we're talking about type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, resistant forms of cancer, I mean, nutrition, it is turning out to be the creme de la creme of being helpful without side effects. So even if you're using drugs for some reason or need to use some kind of a drug treatment for some reason, if you combine it properly with nutrition, you're likely to get a much better result. And if you use nutrition in the first place, you're likely to never need such treatments because you just will simply be well. Now, you would think that somebody who understood gene science like she does would be more of an advocate of embracing the nutritional gene science and figuring out a way to usher in the new generation of health, happiness, and well-being for Americans. But no, she's going back to yesteryear. She is trying to draw a line in the dirt that says nutrients can't help, and in fact, they're so quote-unquote dangerous that they have to be taken over by the pharmaceutical industry, as if those people have any benefit to human health that amounts to, I mean, you know, this is just ridiculous. The FDA relies on propaganda. It relies on, in the case of dietary supplements, they're out trumpeting a big lie, which is the foods, you know, the safety of dietary supplements. Dietary supplements, you know, we had to go through this adverse event reporting legislation, completely unnecessary, but we did it anyway, not because I wanted to do it, for heaven's sakes. I mean, I don't even get adverse event reports to amount to a hill of beans. But I'm sure some happen, and some do happen in the dietary supplement industry, but not very many, and certainly no deaths. I mean, we got hundreds of thousands of people being killed by drugs. We got tens of thousands being killed by food poisoning. We got nobody being killed by dietary supplements. And here we got the commissioner of the FDA telling everyone that dietary supplements pose a safety problem based on, and so whenever you're doing propaganda, you have to have sort of a half-truth to give it credibility. And so there were a handful, and I mean a handful, of companies operating in the bodybuilding and the weight loss arenas with mass marketers of junk propaganda. I mean, these were just blatant criminals. And they represent, you know, like 0.01% of dietary supplement companies. And there's this tiny fraction of people that were spiking products with drugs and selling them. Well, that's criminal, and the FDA caught them, and they shut them down, and they should do that. That's the FDA's job. So, but she is using that problem that happened as a reason that all the other 99.99% of dietary companies have to go through this absolutely ridiculous approval of nutrients as if they're drugs. Now, I've got to point out here, first of all, the problem that she identified is isolated. It's tiny. It isn't anything to amount to a hill of beans. And secondly, the FDA already has the power and authority to take action against such companies, to find them, to weed them out, to take action against them. This is nothing new. They don't need any other power. They don't need any other regulations. They already have the power to do that. The only reason they wouldn't do it is because they're lazy. Not because they can't, but because they just are lazy. Okay? So they take this out of context, tiny little issue, and then they start announcing that the whole dietary supplement, because of this, needs to do what they call NDI, New Dietary Ingredient Regulations, which essentially make, they're retroactively redefining NDI, not the way the 1994 Deshaies Law defined it, but as a pre-approval process against the content or the intent of the law. It's actually flat out illegal what they're doing. It's just unbelievable what they're trying to do. And so, you know, and it's under this convoluted attack, this commissioner is threatening to throw owners of dietary supplement companies in jail for labeling infractions and other things that she considers will be NDI approval things. I mean, this is like tyrannical. I mean, this is just unbelievable. And yet this is what they're doing. And, of course, the losers will be consumers. It's all based on propaganda. When the new NDI regulations were finally issued by the FDA here in July, they said the reason that we need these is because 55,600 dietary supplement products are on the market, and the FDA has only received 700 NDI notifications. So there must be a huge problem, implying that, you know, 54,900 products never submitted NDI. Well, 54,900 products never needed to submit NDIs. This is just bogus. I mean, a new ingredient is a manufacturer's issue if they come on the market with something that's never been in food before. I mean, sure. But that's not what's been going on here. So the reason we don't have all these products with NDIs is because they just absolutely weren't needed. And then secondly, regardless of if a manufacturer gets an NDI approval, goes through all this costly, ridiculous testing to do this, it's still not going to stop anybody from spiking a product that they really want to, which they even admit. So the whole logic and rationale and the need for such absurd overregulation doesn't even exist, yet they're doing it. Yet they've got massive problems with just about every drug on the market, some problems in the food supply, but the drugs are a nightmare. And most of them should be removed from the market because they are an actual nightmare. But no, this zealot for regulatory science doesn't see it that way. She just wants to be a tyrant, wants to hate dietary supplements, wants to use the police force. She calls working with dietary supplements like playing a game of whack-a-mole. You shut down one and it pops up somewhere else. That's what she told a group of students at Columbia University. Nice lady. You know, and then, of course, she's using the Gestapo-style rage with armed U.S. Marshals on American companies, not because there's any threat in their products, but because the FDA doesn't like something about how they labeled the product, or the FDA doesn't like that a company, you know, puts on its website science information about studies showing how what's the ingredients in their product help human health. I mean, this is absurd. It's just absurd. They've raided fruit juice companies, seizing elderberry fruit juice. Why? Because it helps your immune system. They've got a real thing going with the raw foods. Boy, they've been terrorizing Amish dairy farmers, and they've been, you know, going after that group out in California, Raw Some Foods, shutting them down. Wow, these guys are just awesome. You know, so, you know, I make the point here, the Obama administration's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, which is, of course, overseen by the Justice Department, through its gun-running fiasco known as Fast and Furious, you know, they seem it's completely fine to sell high-end weapons to Mexican drug cartels, which has indeed resulted in the loss of several Americans, their lives. And at the same time, the Obama administration's FDA is busy using federal police force to terrorize supplement companies and steal their products, seize fruit juice, and pour milk down the drain. I mean, something is not right here. This is not a good thing. Now, one thing I've got to point out to you all is that Hamburg's father, David Hamburg, a psychiatrist, you know, into things like reducing the future population, so as to prevent violence. You know, this Hamburg guy, he's a real piece of work. I mean, he spent his life, you know, trying to promote this progressive agenda, you would call it, very left-leaning progressive agenda, so as to prevent violence in children, whether it's violence in neighborhoods or violence around the world. I mean, he's kind of motivated his family, or the adults in his family growing up were bringing folks over from Germany trying to escape Hitler. And so one of his motivations for this work of his was to prevent the next Hitler by helping to reduce the hostility and aggressiveness in children so that they wouldn't develop into violent personalities. Well, I got to ask you, where did he go wrong with his own daughter? All right, enough of that. We have to take action here on this. Senator Orrin Hatch is now getting involved. He's one of the original authors of DeShay. He's telling the industry to go ahead and file comments before the end of the month in September, and then get ready to take legal action, and he's saying that he will help with congressional oversight, which he very well may, if needed. However, there's going to have to be a lot of consumers taking action for this to even work, because there has to be broad public support, because the nutrition lobby is diddly squat on Capitol Hill. It exists, but it's nothing powerful and is often misguided. So it's up to you, the consumer, if you value access to dietary supplements at affordable prices to... well, on September 8th, I'm going to remind you to call in. That's phone calls in. The goal is a grassroots movement being orchestrated across the country, not just me telling you, but lots of people will be telling you. And please do it, because we're trying to flood their darn switchboards and get them to pay attention, as well as sending in the emailed versions of letters of complaint to your senators and congresspeople and the FDA and whatnot. All of this pressure needs to be kept up in the month of September. It's a good time to do it, back to school, back after the summer break in the Congress. This is a horrifying issue, really, if you like your supplements and you like access to them, because this is not crying wolf. Okay, we're on to your health questions for the week. First one comes from Eddie, who says, I read your book, The Leptin Diet, How Fit Is Your Fat, numerous times. I weigh 150 pounds after losing 15 pounds from consistently following your 5 rules of the leptin diet. I improve my energy level. However, I am unsuccessfully able to gain lean muscle mass from the leptin diet because of its restrictive calorie guidelines. Even when I eat 4 times a day, I lack calories from carbs, fats, and protein sufficient for my resistant and cardio workouts 3 to 5 days per week. What type of advice can you offer to help me and others struggling with the same issue? Your thoughts and time are greatly appreciated. Well, Eddie, thanks, but you kind of answered your own question. In a sense, I do recommend that you eat 4 times a day, but eat more at each sitting. Only somebody who's doing extreme workouts would have to eat more often, and that would be like a bodybuilder going crazy with, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day of workouts. They just can't get enough food. The leptin diet is all about maximizing hormones in relation to calories in relation to exercise. So somebody who is not able to gain muscle, you'd want to have high-quality protein and high-quality carbohydrates going up in your diet so as to keep your muscles properly hydrated and energized and recovering from the exercise you do, thus you can gain muscle. If you're eating a lot more and you're still not gaining weight, you probably have a digestive problem that's inhibiting some of the uptake of food out of your diet. You might want to consider adding some acidophilus or possibly some digestive enzymes at your mealtime. And then zinc might be very important, because if you don't have adequate zinc, it's very difficult for your body to become anabolic and build muscle. So especially with guys working out a lot, because you lose zinc in your sweat, you may need 75 to 100 milligrams of zinc per day to maximize anabolic signals in the presence of a lot of working out. All right, Lorraine says, with no reproductive organs, what is happening to my metabolism, brain function, sex drive, etc.? Your female supplements are intended to work in concert with the existing female reproductive system. What supplements help in the absence of these major organs? Well, the major, Lorraine, the major, when you have both ovaries missing, the major compound that you're going to have trouble getting something to kind of help you out with is, I mean, in other words, your body can mix and match its, your adrenal glands will make your progesterone-like compounds, your fat cells will make estrogen or estrone, which can be converted to estradiol. But what you can't make is estriol, which is the protective form of estrogen, and it's not usually the one doctors give you. So our FemBalance cream has estriol and progesterone in it, and I would use a quarter teaspoon once or twice a day to replace what your ovaries should be making. Your ovaries should make 2 milligrams a day of estriol for the rest of your life. Estriol does not have anything to do with your menstrual cycle or having children or anything of that sort, other than that when you're pregnant, your levels go up to protect the brain of your baby and help with, that's a little different issue. But just in terms of your general health, you need 2 milligrams of estriol per day, and a quarter teaspoon of the FemBalance cream has 2 milligrams, although you probably only absorb half of it through your skin, so you probably want to do it twice a day since you don't have ovaries. If you don't have ovaries and you don't make estriol, your brain doesn't ever feel relaxed normally. It's very easy to feel agitated, irritated, depressed, and you can take a lot of nutrients that will help your brain and still help your brain feel better, but it never feels quite right, and you need estriol in order for it to feel proper. So that is the main thing. You know, the product Female Plus is an adrenal product. It doesn't need your ovaries to work. So that's another great female product that is designed to smooth out hormonal signals, and that will actually work whether you have ovaries or not. So that's another good anti-stress compound. You're just trying to find really a level of support with these hormones or adrenal support type products where you feel calm and at ease, and the baseline of just feeling good that you can be in touch with, is that's kind of your minimum daily requirement for female hormone support. Maria says, as my digestive issues resolve, a mysterious skin problem also seems to be improving. Are there supplements I should consider adding to specifically address what I think is a patch of psoriasis? I already take most of your supplements for digestive wellness. Maria, is not uncommon for improvement in digestive health to result in a better immune function, and also your skin isn't a dumping ground for extra toxic waste that gets stuck in your skin and provokes autoimmune reactions. But you can get the autoimmune reaction actually coming from the mismetabolism going on in your digestive tract and then showing up in your skin. So good observation that your skin is improving. That's a good thing. You are getting better. You might try some quercetin if you aren't already, because it does help to calm the excessive immune activity. It's highly accumulated in your skin as well as your digestive tract. And of course, squalene is my number one choice as an additional supplement. It's an oil that you can even rub on the skin area, but also take orally. It will come out the other way. And squalene restores the proper oil lubrication barrier to the surface of the skin and kills germs that may be in the skin, because it has a lot of oxygen it holds in a stable configuration. Very unique oil. It's naturally part of your skin. But 3 to 6 a day of squalene is is my number one thing for most skin problems, besides working on the source of the problem, such as the digestive tract. This next question is about curcumin. How much should we take daily, and is it effective used it in our cooking, or is there a better way to get what we need? Well, I like the product Repair Plus, Roberta, that has the high-end curcumin with the biopterin black pepper extract that enhances its bioavailability in your body. That's actually kind of a breakthrough. Anywhere from 2 to 6 a day can be used depending on how much inflammation you're dealing with or what kind of issues you're dealing with. Curcumin is effective in cooking. You might use a lot of it. The bioavailability isn't as good, say, as the supplements, as the concentrated forms of it, but still great for you. You can use, you know, heaping teaspoons or even heaping tablespoons of curcumin in, you know, it spices up your food, obviously. So if that flavoring is good for you, works for you, it's very effective for you, and yes, you can use it in cooking. Joanna would like to know, she says, I heard you mentioned on an earlier podcast not to take Repair Plus out of the capsules because the enzymes were too strong. I cannot swallow pills, so I usually empty the capsules into some applesauce and mix it up. Is it safe to take Repair Plus this way? Are there any other wellness resource supplements that can only be taken with the capsule intact, or are they all okay to mix in applesauce or yogurt? Thank you. Yes, Joanna, you can mix anything into applesauce and yogurt. The main issue would be some of them don't taste very good, but if that doesn't bother you, I mean, you can always hold your nose while you swallow and then eat something else afterwards that tastes different and then breathe, and even the worst smelling things all of a sudden become palatable. But, you know, if your stomach could also become upset in some cases from some things, and so if that's not happening, then there's no reason you can't put anything in applesauce or yogurt. The only caution with the Repair Plus is because the enzymes are strong, you just don't want to get them all over your fingers when you're mixing them up. And so I'm always concerned, you know, a little child or something will be mixing up a Repair Plus because they can't swallow the capsule to get it on their fingers and put their hands in their eyes, and then the enzymes could burn the eye. So that wouldn't be good. Of course, you just wash it out, but still it wouldn't be good. So, you know, it's a minor alert on that. Nothing significant. It's no harm in swallowing the stuff. Okay, Bill says, I've heard a lot lately about CLA for weight loss. I noticed you don't sell it. Do you think it is as good as people are saying? Well, Bill, I don't know who's saying what about CLA. I thought that issue, unless it's a CLA manufacturer trying to say something good about CLA, I would guess the only other kind of people saying something good about CLA are people who haven't read the science of CLA as it relates to weight loss, and therefore, you know, they're selling a supplement that they don't understand, which is typical for a lot of people out there. So I don't know who you're referring to or who's saying what about CLA, but I liked CLA a long time ago, and then about 2004, it became clear that CLA lowered adiponectin by killing fat cells. Actually has the exact opposite effect of DHA on fat cells. But when you lower adiponectin, you create insulin resistance. It doesn't do this in animals, although it does make them get fat in their livers with long-term use, but it does do this in humans. And that is a major, 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 major problem. So I don't recommend CLA for weight loss. I don't sell it. You know, anybody who does simply doesn't understand the subject of adiponectin and or hasn't bothered reading the studies, just reads the promo that the manufacturers want to put out. But it's crystal clear that you don't want to use CLA for weight loss. Jamie says, my father has pre-leukemia condition, myelodysplasia. We are concerned that there is a chance that he will progress to acute myelogenomas. Myelogenomas. Well, that's misspelled here. Leukemia. There are some reports that vitamin K2 can help this condition. What are your thoughts on this, and what would you recommend dosage for this condition? Well, Jamie, vitamin K2, there's different kinds of vitamin K2, the menaquinones. Menaquinone 7 is typically the one that we use, or that Wellness Resources uses in our bone and joint helper. That requires 45 micrograms a day for the help for bones. Now that's called MQ7. Now there's a synthetic vitamin K2 called MQ4, which is not what I use in supplements, but it has some data dating back almost a decade or so showing that doses of 45 milligrams, that's about 1,000 times the dose of the more biologically active K2 that we use, might have some benefit to this condition. I, Jamie, don't have any experience with that and couldn't tell you if that's helpful or not. There is some science saying it is, but you'd have to get some synthetic vitamin K2 M4, MQ4 type, which you'd have to find online somewhere. I don't handle that, and I don't actually know how well it works. I will say this, of course, that vitamin K2 is made in the digestive tract as a result of proper bacterial fermentation. So just boosting up your own vitamin K2 intake would be done by friendly flora and fiber. Increasing those amounts, you'd make lots of vitamin K2. And, you know, digestive health being better is always good for anything going on in the bones. Anyway, of course, vitamin K2 is important for your bones. Now, this particular condition you're talking about means that there's a lot of bone cells, bone marrow tissue cells, the bone cells in the bone marrow, the white blood cells, the red blood cells, they're just not getting off to the races properly. Something inflammatory is interfering with them. So I personally would use nutrients that reduce inflammation in the bone. I would absolutely make sure vitamin D levels are in the therapeutic range between 50 and 80, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast. That would be the first thing I would do with your father, is get his vitamin D levels tested and get them optimized, because that could be the whole problem right there, maybe, maybe not. A variety of nutrients that help bone loss would be good for this simply because they reduce bone inflammation. So that would be the vitamin K2. It would be other nutrients. There are many of them. I list them on the website. There are, you know, there's a variety of them in our Bone and Joint Helper is full of them. Repair Plus has them all. I mean, you can do a bunch of things here. And then the number one nutrient I actually like when there is a bone marrow condition going on is called, it's a shark liver oil called alkaglycerols. And I used to make that as a private label. We don't make it anymore, simply because I just didn't have enough use for it. I'm not a cancer clinic, or I, you know, probably still sell it. But we just didn't sell enough of it. But we have it at our office. It's alkaglycerols, shark liver oil. Ecomer makes the product, that I like. So you can get that maybe other places as well. But, you know, you want to have about six of those a day of the Ecomer alkaglycerols to help bones with their white count and the health of their white blood cells. So that would be a specific thing along with other bone anti-inflammatories and making sure that your father has optimized vitamin D so that this sort of what they call a pre-leukemic condition doesn't progress. That would be the best tips I would have for that, Jamie. All right, that's it for your questions this week. If you have a question for me, please email it to me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com. Have a great week, and of course, I'll be back next week with yet another Weekly Wellness Update podcast.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated, copyright 2008, all rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.